So what I'd like to talk about in this huge realm of prevention services is really, these are the areas where we try to offer some action. And that's somewhat prompted by Sarah Woodhall, who heard an assessment talk that I gave and said, well, is that going to lead to action? And of course it is. And thank you to fellow rapporteurs, SABRE staff, presenters who were very kind to send some slides on very short notice, and of course the speaker ready room staff, seeing as I pretty much slept there overnight. Right. Themes and topics, again, out of this mix that we'd like to discuss today would be, I think we can take as sort of stipulate that STD prevention is important for its own sake. So what I did was look through some of the presentations and think, where else do we find STD prevention? What is it intermingled with? So those are the interactions. And then, what are we doing in the realm of technological innovation? And then finally, what's the potential here for bringing some interventions to scale, even if we don't have them to scale right now? So moving on to STD prevention, HIV prevention. I searched through the program book, and we've got 248 matches, which is not bad for 500-odd abstracts. Even if you take out people's affiliations, you reckon it's still probably 100 abstracts or so that are dealing with HIV in an STD prevention conference. So we have some sort of evidence that the two are at least intermingled. I also looked at HIV testing in prevention services in STD clinical settings, and you may recall this was part of a debate point raised over whether we need HIV prevention should include STD prevention. And from CDC, Pooja Seth presented that we had that STD clinics conducted about 1 in 5 of the CDC-funded HIV tests and found about 1 in 4 of newly confirmed positives. So you can see that STD clinics are an important source of finding HIV, and that's including through partner services, as Felicia Lewis showed from Philadelphia data. Linkage and retention in care is another function out of these STD clinics, and while there's certainly room for improvement, as Sue Blank pointed out, I think we can see that that much of that work has already been done. In other clinical settings, and just a point to look at, risk reduction counseling for HIV. One point I thought, this was a reduction of a counseling session from 2 to 1, and often you lose a little bit of efficacy in the actual counseling session, but if you're going to more than double the number of clients who actually take it, the question is, how much can you give up when your coverage increases by 11 percentage points? And this was partly because of counselors were more likely to offer the intervention as well as the client uptake. This is part of Felicia Lewis's presentation on it. She has a series of very elegant slides here for it. The point I wanted to hit here was a point she made in her presentation, was that we don't even have to limit ourselves to new HIV cases. These were previous HIV cases that were found during the course of a partner services investigations. And you can see in the yellow over here, there is room here to relink and re-engage people in care, including moving towards viral suppression. Sue Blank presented these data, and this is, I alluded to a couple of slides ago. If you look, there are some differences in the speed with which people are linked to care in STD clinic settings outside these other settings. But as she pointed out, you're referring to these settings to get the linkage. And the difference, although in some cases statistically significant, is not that great. Right. And we can use the same sort of metrics to improve that as we would for non-STD clinic settings. The final slide in this area is HIV-positive patients, so obviously it's STD and HIV prevention, from Ashley Scarborough. And she had examined risk assessments in HIV-positive men who have sex with men who are in care, and found that these were maybe a little bit of a barrier, as it so happens, to getting screening done. So they devised a short, self-administered questionnaire, and you can see here, and very much in a quality improvement frame as well, that you had increases in screening at these other areas based on the self-questionnaire, which the patients in care also found very acceptable and generally praised. If you move on to reproductive health, there were several efforts in here, and of course this is another natural match, including reproductive health services offered in STD clinic settings, such as IUD provision. And you can see not everybody gets an IUD, of course, but it's important to measure the outcomes of this work. And so they measured areas like discontinuation. You get a very small number. So you have some follow-up that's possible out of an STD clinic setting for it. I put the second bullet in because this was one of a very lively debate, I thought. And so Depo-Provera was one of the injectables measured here, and we see pretty reasonable rates of incidence if we're looking here. And it didn't matter which injectable was. Right. Let's skip over that one for here. This is from Choices. So the point on the previous slide was to reduce alcohol-exposed pregnancies. And the reason I think this is important to discuss is because you have here in an STD clinic setting an intervention that is not directly aimed at STD prevention, but through the reduction in the amount of alcohol, many of the women in this study who were going to either reduce their alcohol intake or get on effective contraception as a means to avoiding an alcohol-exposed pregnancy, will also wind up reducing their STD risk because the alcohol was so much associated with those risks. In other health areas, sometimes those are more or less directly obvious, or at least to me, but screening brief intervention and referral in New York City clinics, this was a poster by Espinoza, and you can see that the point, reducing substance use disorders, they were able to affect that, but also fewer STDs as well, another example of an intervention you can offer that has a positive consequence for STDs. And it's always important, right? You want to know for an STD clinic that you're doing some good for what they're there for, regardless of what you're there for. If there's any missing material from here, mental health, I think, is still somewhat overlooked. I will say there was an excellent mini plenary session on social determinants that touched upon this, although the mental health was forthcoming. And I'll show you a couple of slides from that. This was relocation. Right, so this is a big social policy intervention. It's relocation in Atlanta, and I would sort of hesitate to say that the purpose of this intervention was for the benefit of STDs. But if you look down in positive for an STD, down in these waves, W1 is wave 1, wave 2, et cetera, so the 2 through 4 post-relocation, you'll see a consistent and steady drop in the STD positivity from individuals who are relocated. And this actually was for the Atlanta Olympics, so that was sort of the motivation for it. I don't want to sort of trivialize what could be some negative consequences. Regardless of having less STD, people feel that they're being involuntarily located for a purpose in which they're not going to share. Those sorts of issues still have to be dealt with, of course. All right. There we go. And this is the only person who gets two slides from the presentation on it. It's specifically noted we're studying here social policy as the primary exposure, and this is something that is very difficult to get in a lot of this work. Right. The role of community in prevention, right? And this is very much intermingled for it. There were a number of abstracts in that area for it. I want to just run you quickly through three. The Tuskegee National Center for Bioethics taking us basically through the process and the evolution of working with communities from this dependent relationship to this mutual relationship and then ethical community engagement. The other two bullets, I'm going to cover these in a couple of slides for it, both in posters. Community public health partners to reduce syphilis in Shreveport. So this is a report from Shreveport about working with their clinical access and providing community awareness, with which I think we're all familiar, but also the support of the mayor's office as well. So you have some political buy-in to the issue of reducing syphilis, and a similar situation in Maine as well with some community awareness work. This is a logic model designed for community approaches for reducing STD, and this is an output from CDC funding. Joe Valentine is the CDC lead on this, and Scott Rhodes produced a logic model and presented it in a poster. So this is sort of a plan for action for community engagement, and Golding actually presented some tools and approaches for community engagement on it as we work in STD, and call it a social disease for nothing. All right. Plug for DIS, disease intervention specialists, however you call them. These guys can be the bridge, right? These people, I should say, can be the bridge in this area. As we show for some embedded DIS, this is a poster from the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health and California Family Health Council, where they're embedded. And you can see this is timeliness of interviews for it. It takes a little longer to get the people to interview if you're in the embedded DIS, that's a CE DIS. But at the end of it, you can see the slope increases and you're actually interviewing more people. All right, last two, technology and preventions. Two flavors for this. If you remember the BASF commercial, sorry, we don't make the interventions you use, we make them better. So introducing texting, we'll just take the one from there. The point I'd like to make in there is actually the second sub-bullet. If you opted into texting, right, so this is a big answer for it, what happens to your treatment? Well, it was a little bit earlier than it was if you didn't opt in. And of course, you're giving the patients a choice under here, so it's not randomized, but it's an important outcome. Sometimes they do make the interventions that you use. And I had to skip over all the excellent communications campaigns, except for putting a couple up in the corner there, right, and just focused on community condom availability. These are all about mailing or having people go to a site or a source to get condoms and get them easily for it. And one of these was in California. You see they map the work on it, so you go online, you find out the nearest one, you pop in, you get your condoms. In Boston University, Eminence will mail them to you in a discreet package. And what's interesting, I thought about this slide, if you look on the right-hand side, actually asked who managed to use the condoms, and you see it was most of them. Final point is on scale, interventions at scale. Right? We know some services and interventions are at or near scale, and we often just don't really describe those partner services, communications campaigns almost naturally, etc. Right. We see some interventions that have potential, where you think the scalability would be generally easy, it would be quite easy. Printing self-test vouchers, the vouchers are cheap to produce, right? If people use them, it gets more expensive because you have to buy the test, but that's what you're looking for in the first place. And what I thought was interesting about this poster down here from Marlin was that distributed 292, only 50 people used them, so this is in a small area, but found a number of new HIV infections. So maybe this is actually an efficient, sort of self-guided approach to finding HIV. We know it's not easy to move the scale. This is an RCT from the UK, Accelerated Partner Therapy, and as they moved from these specialist clinics with these hotline and pharmacy approaches, they found the uptake was lower, and in fact, it looked like the ability to find partners was a little lower as well. But I'm not putting it on there to tell you the negative results. Very interesting point made in the course of that presentation about the role of randomization, and that when you randomize individuals, when you otherwise have choice, some people will be put into conditions that they can't do instead of conditions that they could do. There was a previous study, randomized study, in which they actually had much better results when people had the choice. So national scale-up, this is a real big picture for it. This is Pierre Barker's plenary talk, and the point he made in here was that bringing the intervention of testing and treating across 3,000 primary care networks over 3 years is what brought a program to not only meet its goal, but exceed its goal considerably. On it. This is the final content slide, I believe. Two themes on it. This came out of the Program Science Symposium, where there were a number of comments made about having the data collection be easy at the point of collection for it, and then let us not remember that this doesn't mean that you can't use complex analyses for it. And the last is, I try to emphasize in this talk, the role of policy. And I must say, I encourage you to become a rapporteur the next time round for it. It's easy, in passing at least. Thank you.
Thank you.